Well, let's start by having you two identify yourselves, your name, and what you're doing with the show here.
My name's Ronnie Johnston, and I play, even though he's not identified on stage as such, but I'm playing the narrator, Gene Shepherd, in The Christmas Story.
Okay.
And I'm Richard Roland. I am the director of Christmas Story, the musical.
A Christmas Story, the musical. Now, I have not seen the musical, but I think everybody listening has probably seen the movie.
I hope so.
Start us off and tell us, when they made it into a musical, how did they make this work?
As musicals do, when you adapt something from a non-musical source, the music allows you to get a little bit further into a character on the inside of it. For instance, we get a little more experience in Ralphie's head, in his friends' heads, the kids. How do they all react to the town bully? How do they all react to Miss Shields? How do they react to Ralphie's fantasies when Ralphie conjures up these things of being the hero who's going after Black Bart and everybody joins in and becomes his supporter? On the sweet side, we get to see a little bit more into the old man and mother. And we see mother and father, we see a little bit of their soul. I think the musical allows us to get a little bit further inside.
Now that's cool. Shepherd told lots of stories about his family and his parents, the old man and his mother with a red chenille bathrobe hanging over the sink doing the meatloaf and the red cabbage and all this stuff. You're playing, essentially, you're taking the part of Gene Shepherd, who narrates this. And of course, he originally told it on the radio, and then wrote it down. It was in Playboy, and then it was in his book, In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash. How are you approaching this? Are you doing Shepherd?
That's an interesting question. You know, as an actor, when you're approaching something, there's always that, how much am I trying to create a really accurate, I don't know, kind of an AI version of this character?
An impression, and then, maybe?
Yeah. So if you're doing a show like Give 'Em Hell, Harry, there's a certain obligation to be as Truman-esque as possible, even though Truman's died long before most people watching that would know. Mm-hmm. When I saw this movie, I didn't come to it with any kind of background on who Gene Shepherd was.
Oh.
I was just watching a movie. Mm-hmm. So for me, this is less about Gene Shepherd and more about a guy who runs a very successful radio show. Uh-huh. And on his way into work that day, on a very blistery winter day, he happens upon a Salvation Army Santa Claus, perhaps a little drunk, listlessly ringing his bell. And that reminds him of another Christmas, another time, another place. And he jettisons what he was going to do that night to tell this new story that he thinks is going to be wonderful.
Yeah.
So me as the actor, who is this guy? And to what extent does this story grow and become more challenging, more interesting, more difficult, bigger than the story he actually intended to tell? And what does he learn from this story? What's the transformation for him? You know, a lot of people enjoy Christmas, particularly kids, but a lot of people, they're experiencing Christmas. Their children are coming back from college, or their children have their own children. So for them, Christmas is 50% what's happening now compared to these memories they have, right? And so the narrator is that guy who experiences Christmas now, but it's always in the sense of what has happened in the past. And so in that sense, being someone like him, there's a whole chunk of the audience that enjoys Ralphie, but is not Ralphie. There's a whole chunk of the audience that is Gene, that is the narrator. And I want to try to find their story. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, how am I doing Gene Shepherd? I'm not. I'm doing a guy who has a radio show who decided to tell a story that became much bigger than the story he intended to tell.
Very good. Gene Parker Shepherd Jr. And, of course, there's this Indiana connection because Shepherd grew up in Hammond, Indiana, and that's where all this really happened.
That's right.
Now, from a director's point of view, what have been your challenges in making this really work?
A challenge would have been is integrating what we call the youth ensemble. We've got an ensemble of 10 kids in each cast, mm-hmm. and ranging from 8 to, I believe, 14. And keeping them in the same story that my adult actors are in as well, which is all still coming from the mind of our Gene, not Gene character.
Yes.
And just keeping that world going, keeping the youth ensemble in a sense of not now-isms, contemporary deliveries, and reminding them that this is a period in which we didn't say woo when we were cheering somebody on. We said yay.
Yeah.
It's really trying to introduce them to the world of what this was, pre-video games, of course.
Yeah, pre-cell phones,
pre-TV. I mean, they listen to the radio,
yes.
Right? So trying to get them to understand that world, that their entertainment was not as all-encompassing or always available as it, or ubiquitous as it is now.
Gene Shepherd was born, actually, I think, in 1924, and he was a kid in the 1930s. So that's really the time frame of this story.
Right.
Pre-World War II. They were not as poor as some people were in the Depression,
right.
But it was a tough time.
Yeah. Yeah, times are tough. You know, she's serving meatloaf
incessantly.
Yeah.
Red cabbage, all this stuff.
Just reminding that it was not an easy time.
Of course, Ralphie is Gene Shepherd. Shepherd did tell these stories on the radio off the cuff, you know.
Right.
It's this guy who remembers his life and then has an adult angle on what he's remembering. Now, you have two casts of kids because they just can't do the entire run.
That's right.
You know, they have to alternate.
That's right.
What have been the kids' reactions?
I think they're having a blast. I think they're always anxious to... We switch our casts back and forth in rehearsals. So we have one cast is called Team Red Rider,
mm-hmm.
and the other cast is called Team Pink Bunny. So it's Red Rider, it's Pink Bunny, Red Rider. And so they're always eager to get up there and do their stuff. They are eager. I think they're really digging it. They laugh at Scott, our actor who plays Old Man. He's very funny. I think they're really just getting into it. They love the music. They love that they get up there and they get to sing a song about what it's like to be a wimp in the face of Farkas and Grover Dill.
Yes.
They're eating it up. Oh, the Santa slide scene in Higby's. You know, they're having the time of their life.
Ho, ho, ho.
And they're screaming as they go down that slide. You know, they're a blast. But the thing that balances that out so nicely is that the adult cast is so solid.
Mm.
And when Cassandra and Scott are together as mother and old man, and there's Randy and Ralphie at the dinner table. They look like a family. They operate like a family. Both sets of Randys and Ralphies.
Yeah, and that is true to life.
Yes.
This really is, because this is based on true stories.
Exactly, right.
This is real.
This all really happened.
Yeah. Now, the music is the one element that was not in the movie or the book,
exactly.
You know. What is the music like?
The music is, it's everything from Old Man goes into a fantasy about when he gets the leg lamp, when he gets the award.
Yeah.
And it's an actual song called A Major Award. And he imagines himself, it's a Busby Berkeley type extravaganza with mini leg lamps that come out from the ensemble. It's a lot of fun. The kids go into what it would be like if they were actually tough themselves and with Wimp. So that's more of a fun, upbeat, slightly pop in number, you know, which
uh-huh.
is a little anachronistic for the time period. But I think that's one of the successes that the authors and the composer and lyricists have done in bridging the audience from 2025 watching something set in 1939.
Yeah. Pop music in 1939 was big band swing.
Exactly. Exactly. The idea that the youth would sing a different sound than what the adults would sing is what the writers have done, which is great.
Right.
There's a couple of Western numbers just because it's Red Rider.
Red Rider, yes.
But it's a very sweet score. And the mother gets a very, very well-written song about what it's like to be the mother of that family. And it's called What a Mother Does. And it's all set around the evening when she gets Randy to eat the meatloaf and mashed potatoes by being a pig.
Yes.
So it's all wrapped in with that scene. So we get to see her do that famous moment with Piggy eating out of his trough, but we get to see more of why she's doing it and how she's going to get him to do it and what it means when she can look at her family who never say thank you to her. They never let her have a hot meal, and she's always running around, but she's so happy to be with them. Mm-hmm. And it's all told from her point of view in that moment. It's a very sweet moment.
Yeah, I think this is one of the strengths of making this a musical. Because as you pointed out, in the film, it's Ralphie's film. It's about Ralphie.
Yeah.
But in a musical, you get the music, right? Which is this kind of universal language that gets us into this emotional state. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, we can have this musical where we can really explore who is mom? What makes mom tick? Who's dad? What makes dad tick? What makes Ralphie tick? What makes these people tick? Because the music gets us in there so quickly and so solidly that what would take in a straight play, what would take a lot of time to set the audience up for, mm-hmm. the audience gets brought in there through the music. So it's really powerful.
I can totally see that. As an audio theater actor, we say we have four elements in radio theater. You have speech, you have sound effects, you have music, and silence in the sense of timing. And they do different things. Speech gives you information, but it also gives you the people. And sound effects are the things that help you make pictures in your head. But music is the element that speaks to your emotions. It speaks right to your gut. And that is how it is used in a radio, in an audio production. And Shepard was, of course, really a radio guy.
Yeah.
The movie was brilliant, and he's actually in it, you know. He's the guy who says, the end of the line's back there, kid, in the department store.
Right.
That's Shepard. Music is important to this, and it was important to Shepard, actually, because he was a musician. Not only did he play sousaphone in his high school marching band, and they were a very good marching band in the day, but on the air, he played nose flute, Jew's harp, and occasionally did Kopfspiel. Do you know what Kopfspiel is?
Not
I should, but I don't.
It's when you hit yourself on the head and shape your mouth.
Oh, God.
Like that.
Maybe that's how those stories came out. He kept knocking his brain.
music was important to him.
Mm-hmm. The music plays a really important part in the film as well, not as a musical, but in how they use the Grand Canyon Suite
Yes. In
places. Just even the theme song of Little Orphan Annie on the radio to put us in that time frame.
Yes. And that was extremely important to them in that time period.
Yes.
Not only the music of dance bands and so forth, but every radio show had its theme song, and when you heard it. If somebody's coming to go see this show, would you have any advice for them about how to prepare for it or where to put their head when they're walking in?
First of all, let go of everything you think you know about it.
Okay.
And just absorb the fact that because it's now on stage and it's a musical and it's told from the singular point of view of Gene, the narrator,
mm-hmm.
it's a memory play. And when you're in a memory play, you only need the essence of what that location looks like. That's how you, first of all, do it in a small theater. We have taken what are the essences of this story. It's a memory. So what do we do with the set? I won't tell you because I think our set designer, Vincent Gunn, has done a beautiful job mm-hmm. in creating this world that is abstract but tangible. And it's all in memory. So that allows us to flow from place to place, location to location, almost cinematically in the blink of an eye, but it's all happening on stage.
It's all about the imagination.
Yes.
And that's radio.
Yes.
The audience participates by imagining what's going on.
Exactly.
And that's a major difference with film or video where it's all, you know, given to you and you're just sitting there consuming it. And so what you have on stage, the audience should be prepared to use their imagination.
Exactly. And in fact, that's how we started. It's in the script to start it off in a radio station and
uh-huh.
then it melts away and we go into the past. But I wanted to change that even for us. And in the first few minutes of the piece, we're actually looking at a radio show with a cast, and they're at their microphones and they've got their scripts. It's a little off of what this is really based on.
Right.
But I wanted to find a way to get us into 1939 through this radio show. How do we just jump from a radio show into the Parker's kitchen? I think they'll be surprised. I hope they'll be surprised. The movie is about a boy who wants the best Christmas present ever.
Yeah.
The show is also about that, but as I was telling everybody at first, I was like, this show is not really about a boy who wants a gun. It's a boy who wants his father to love him and recognize him. I brought that because my father was Gene's generation, born in 1928. But whenever this movie was on TV and we happened to be watching it, he just laughed his face off because he said that this is one of the few movies made in the 80s about the 30s that actually got everything right.
You know, looked right.
It looked right. It sounded right. It, all the right props, all the, you know, the life buoy.
The language.
The language, the phone, the interior of Higbee's, which was, you know, shot out in Cleveland in front of Dillard's, which used to be Higbee's. But Dad just said the details were, it was just impeccable. And he laughed at Darren McGavin. So that's...
Yes. Well, Shepard told a lot of stories about his old man on the radio in various contexts and obviously had great affection for him. This was a nucleus family, mom, dad, and two boys.
Yes.
It was the kind of family we all kind of hope for. You know, we're lucky if we have.
Yep. They're depicted so realistically. There's nothing sugary about it. There's nothing rose-colored glasses about it. This is who the family is. They're flawed, and they make mistakes, and they still come home at the end of the day and say, I love you.
Yes.
In their own way.
Shepard himself had, I think, a very good life altogether. He married several times, so I don't know about that. But he had a lot of fun. He had a lot of fans. He had a lot of people who enjoyed what he did and respected him very much. You know, I had the good luck to meet him when I was 15.
Wow. What was that like?
Well, my parents asked me what I wanted for my 15th birthday, and I said, I want to go into New York and go to the limelight and see Shepard. So we went, and I went up to him in a break, or maybe it was afterwards, and I introduced myself, and I said, do you ever do anything for high schools? And he said, sure, kid. And I went back to my high school, and they took it up and arranged it, and he came and did an assembly for our high school.
That's amazing.
I went back a second time because they wrote a story about it in the school paper, and they misspelled his name. So I took a copy of that paper back into the limelight like the next week or two, and he signed it. He wrote on it, you will hear from my lawyer, Gene Shepard. I still have that paper. But I marinated in him every night for 10 years. I had a clock radio on my bedside table. My parents gave it to me so I could wake up for school in the morning, right? And I'm supposed to be in bed and asleep. But no, I set it for 11:15 at night, because that's when Shepard came on. WOR did 15 minutes of news, and the radio would click on, and there's WOR New York, and then that music would start. It's Shepard time. And he would go till midnight when Long John Neville came on with another talk show, and I try to go to sleep. I actually remember, this is true, I actually remember a couple of times falling out of bed because I was laughing so hard. You know, that's really hard to do, you know.
It is, yeah.
He never had a guest. He never had a script. He just came in and went. Just this idea that somebody could just talk. He was a storyteller.
Right, yeah.
And that's why we have this show. He was a storyteller. And he told true stories. Well, a little exaggerated here and there.
That's what storytellers do.
Now, does the musical include the episode of the final episode of the Bumpus' Family Next Door?
Oh, yeah.
We
got the hounds.
The hounds. You know, on the air, on the radio, he says, now they had 7,427 dogs.
Living under the garage.
Yeah.
You know, of course, in his story, it was the ham that they ate rather than the turkey, right?
Yeah, on the radio, yes, it wasn't a turkey. It was a ham. But for the movie, they changed it to a turkey because it was a Christmas story.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine. You know.
It still works.
It still works. It's just wonderful that Constellation chose to do this particular show. It's so many things. I think it's very, very American.
Yes. Very.
It's just, I don't know. Here I am, a radio guy, and I don't know what to say. It's heart. It's heart through the mind.
Right. Christmas Story has these wild escapades, but they're never that far out of reach from what we've all been through.
Yeah.
We've all had the dinner that went wrong. We've all had a fight at school.
Yeah.
All these little things that to a 9-year-old are insurmountable and catastrophic.
A mountain to get over.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've all been through those things. Christmas Story is just real.
This is a wonderfully timely presentation. Nice work on the schedule. And I think everyone can relate to this story, regardless of age, regardless of family background, regardless of where they come from, whether you're a college professor or a farmer or whatever. Everyone can relate to this.
I agree.
When you're dealing with a memory play, anything that's a memory locks up in a certain way, right? And so we tend to, that's my memory of that device, and we form it and we cut it, and there it is. That's exactly what we want. In terms of how it helps us grow and evolve as people, that memory is a building block, but it is no longer transformative because we've frozen it in time. I think the advantage in this memory play, because the story gets away from Gene, that he has to renegotiate this memory, re-understand, be challenged by this memory in a way he wasn't expecting to.
Mm-hmm.
And so if an audience comes in and we just say, just keep an open mind to your favorite Christmas memory, that may have nothing to do with this play, but keep an open mind to your Christmas memory and see what else it might have to teach you if you take it out of the deep freeze. Because for me as an actor, he's taken this memory out of the deep freeze and it has changed him.
Yeah, that's right. I knew this would happen. We have been having so much fun. We've been going on and on. You have to leave before too long.
I do have to go, and I apologize.
That's all right. But and the other thing we haven't done enough is to tell people when and where this show is happening and how they can get tickets.
Well, it's at Constellation Stage and Screen at the Waldron Arts Center, just off the square in downtown Bloomington. We open December 12th. And we run through, director sets the show and then runs away once it's open.
We have to be there the whole time.
Yeah.
Ronnie will be entertaining audiences through Sunday, January 4. And they can go to seeconstellation.org, S-E-E constellation, one word, .org, for ticket information. Tickets are going fast, I have to say.
Great.
Here's the commercial voice in me coming out. December 11th through January 4th. Sorry, I was off by a day. So Thursday the 11th through January 4th, seeconstellation.org. There's about 30 performances total. You can get all the information online. It's all there. So this jump on the website.
This is a big deal, a run of 30 performances. That's a big deal. And it's a big show.
It's a very big show.
So if you have seen the movie, you will love this show because it won't be exactly the movie. It'll be something even newer and better.
Yeah.
I want to thank you both again for coming in and talking with me. And I hope everyone will enjoy what we've had to say and go and enjoy the show.
Great. Thank you so much, Richard.
Thank you
Christmas Story,
us.
The musical.